pleased to introduce the next speaker. Herman Thorisson comes from University of Iceland, and he's going to give a talk about ship coupling and mass stationarity.
Thank you. Yes, this is one more talk based on joint work with Gunter Last, and probably not the last. Yes, it is basically built on joint work with Gunter. We've been working on this thing, these things, for about 7 or 8 years, and so. Mass stationarity. Actually, I gave a talk here for the others who were not here last week. I gave a talk sort of preparing for this. So I will go fast now. Here is a definition of a concept, mass stationarity. The mass stationarity is, stationarity of a random field, for instance, or a random measure. Means that it doesn't matter where you put the origin. The origin is at a typical location in space. Mass stationarity is when you have the origin as a typical, at a typical location in the mass of a random measure. Okay, here is the setting. So let me see if I can. So we have a nice group with its R measure, so you can think of RD if you like. Even R is interesting. Xi is a random measure on the group, and it's equipped with the Borel sets, the group. And then, in addition to the random measure, there is some random element in a space on which G acts. And I write theta t for the shift map placing a new origin at t in G. So it is shifting by the inverse of t. To think of, have a slightly more concrete idea of what x is, you can think of it as a random field. Indexed by the group, but the important thing here is the random measure. The random element x just hangs along with it. Okay, here is now a definition. The pair x psi is mass stationary. And here comes, this is a curious definition. Is mass stationary if for all bounded lambda continuity sets. Lambda continuity set means that the boundary of C has lambda mass zero of positive Lebesgue measure. This holds. You take x and xi, and the inverse. Okay, let's first look at what these things are, u and v. U is just a uniform guy. So if you know x and xi, you will have distribution lambda. So it is independent and uniform. But v is slightly more complicated. The distribution of v, c, is if you know x and xi and this uniform, it is here is a mistake, right, Gunter? This should be c shifted by u. Sorry, that was a very important thing. This should be Okay. So V is placed, where am I now? So V is placed according to the mass of psi the set C shifted by shifted like that. Okay, and I think I will have to anyone with a piece of paper. Here is something. Can I take it? So, to have it slightly more concrete, let G the group be R2. This is R2, and there is a mass distribution in the space, and the origin is somewhere, and it is in the mass of psi, actually. Should have said that. And this is the set C, and to make it more general, I tear it a little bit. So this is the set C. Suppose it's here. So we pick a uniform random variable in this set. Here, for instance, take the set, shift it over here. That's what I'm doing here. And so here is the set. After shifting it, and then V is a vector that is chosen according to the mass distribution within this shifted set. So let this mass be slightly more. Suppose it's there also. This would be VC is going out there. So you throw a set uniformly at random around the origin, and then look at the mass in the set, and you choose your new location for the origin in that mass according to its distribution. That is what is happening here, and if you do that, yes?
Can you say a few words on the respective role of X and psi?
Yeah, let me just finish this. So I have explained U and V, and it enters into this formula in the way that if you shift the origin to V from here to there, then nothing changes. It's invariance under that shift. So it is a randomized self-shift coupling. So the shifted guy is like the original one. So now you have a question, Francois?
Yeah, so just the respective roles of X and Xi.
Okay, Xi is the important thing. X just, you can forget it if you like. So it is so important, Xi. But it's good to have X there because that's what you usually want to know something about. Take an example which will come at the end. Brownian motion is X. Xi is local time at zero.
So this is the definition, right? So
what?
So in some sense, the origin was chosen with the mass at the origin, with the weight of the mass.
Yes, yeah. I should have mentioned that there is mass. I'm assuming that there is mass. In this definition, that there is mass, the origin is in the mass, in the support of psi. Okay, so this is, as I explained last week, this is a natural definition of the fact that the origin is at a typical location in the mass of psi. And it doesn't stare at you when you look at this, I guess. So let's consider briefly what I talked about last week. It is the case when G is compact. When G is compact, or even when G is finite, so let's just think of G finite, compact. So then Hall measure has finite mass, and Xi has also finite mass. And therefore, since Xi has finite mass, you can actually place the origin uniformly at random in that mass, because you can normalize the mass to have total mass 1. And then you can choose a location in that mass according to that distribution, and it should be typical location in the mass. And I went through this to prove this, which is easy, but it takes 12 lines of Fubini and whatever. Here is the result. So we could choose the origin distributed according to the mass distribution. So we could place it at a typical location. So we let S have the distribution psi, and if this pair has the property that you shift the origin to S, then it doesn't change, then we say that the origin is at a typical location. And the theorem here says that this pair is mass stationary if and only if the origin is at a typical location in X. So the definition from last page holds for this if and only if the origin is placed at a typical location in the compact case. So that is a motivation for this definition. And you can see in the compact case we can choose C to be the whole group. And then what we have here is this should not be that, it's this. If G is the whole group, then this is the whole group, so we are just normalizing the whole mass. And then UG is distributed according to Hall measure. This conditioning doesn't depend on U at all. So it only depends on psi in that case. It doesn't depend on U at all when C is the whole group. So then V, G is distributed according to the mass. And so in the special case of compact groups, when we have C equal to G, this is just typically T of the origin in the mass. Okay, so this is one motivation for this concept. It is a concept that I have thought of for quite long, and I don't have an intuition for it, which is terrible. I'm trying to develop it, therefore I'm... Yes? Where C? Poisson process, for instance. Any random measure, Poisson process with point at the origin, would have this property, which doesn't stare at you, I guess. Okay, so this is quite abstract talk, so you ask me when you want to get something concrete. Okay, so let me try to go fast now. I think most of my time is over and I'm page 2. Okay, so here comes the second motivation for this concept. So let me go just straight to, you can read this, but let's go straight to the theorem. A pair is mass stationary
and stationary, and now I'm actually I'm looking at locally compact groups now. I skipped the compact case.
We are in local compact now. So the pair is mass stationary if it is the Palm version
of a stationary pair. So it is an intrinsic characterization of Palm versions of stationary
pairs. And here is a corollary. If we choose xi equal to Haar measure, which is a very trivial case, then mass stationarity of this pair is equivalent to stationarity of x. So mass stationarity is a generalization of stationarity. Okay, here is something that I was just finishing half an hour ago, so I hope it's okay. So we are going to consider Palm version. So I'm letting this be Palm version of a pair, stationary pair. But not standard Palm, not the proper Palm version, but a normalized one. So actually, if we go back here, yes, I didn't mention it. So it in Palm theory, it is
mathematically, not maybe probabilistically, but mathematically
natural to allow the measures that you are working with, both this one and that one,
not to be probability measures, but to be sigma finite measures. And one example that is sort of should convince you is that if you take Brownian motion, it is actually the Palm version of a stationary pair. There is a stationary version of Brownian motion. That's when you place the initial the value at zero according to the whole Lebesgue measure. Then you get a sigma finite measure.
Where? Here?
And Brownian motion is, standard Brownian motion is the Palm version of that one.
So it is not mathematical
fancy stuff to have sigma finite things. It's actually essential to let the theory work. A point process in general?
In general, yes.
Yes, okay.
And so what does the
simple point process,
yes. Simple point, let's say a simple point process.
Not necessarily Poisson.
Not necessarily Poisson.
Okay.
So how it connects to what is the instantiation of your definition of mass stationarity Poisson for the simple case for a point process stationarity?
Yeah, it's the same. It's just you throw a set uniformly at random around the origin, and then you choose a point in that set uniformly at random. You choose one, there are finitely many points, at least one, the one at the origin. And so there are several points there, and you choose one of them at random, and you go there, and nothing changes.
Okay, so the only the set, the family of sets you have to look at is the family of sets whose boundary supports is not in the support of the point process, given that there is a point at the origin.
Lambda continuity, so there should not be a Lebesgue measure on the boundary. But for point processes, yes, there should not be a Lebesgue measure on the boundary.
But this is given that there is a point at the origin.
Yes.
And therefore, so then there is it's a property of the two-point correlation function or something. You know that your assumption is that there is a point at the origin. So the assumption that there is no point on the boundary of that set pertains to some moment measure of order 2.
Okay. Yes, in the point process case, I think you can skip the condition that there is no mass on the boundary. Right, Gunther? What? It is less restrictive, yes. And it works out to be the same. Yeah. Okay, this is technicalities. I think just believe that this works at the moment and ask me when I'm on page 15 or something. I'm sorry. What? Yes, yeah, I know, yeah. But I just wanted to point it out explicitly. It's better to know it's there. Okay, let me go fast now. Okay, so where was I? No, going the wrong way. Here. Okay, so let's go through this. This is an old thing, actually, I worked on with another guy here, David Altus. shift coupling. It turned out that this concept actually fitted precisely into Pound theory, first in the point process case, but here it actually is. It works for in our general random measure case. I'm now assuming that the probability measure, these two are probability measure, not only sigma finite, and have the property that the probabilities of invariant sets are identical, and this is always the case when they are trivial, when they are Pound versions of each other. Then if they are trivial, then they will be identical. So I'm assuming that this pair is the Pound version of that pair, but a normalized Pound version. And you can, because you have two sigma finite measures, and you the one is Pound version, gives you Pound version of the other, and then you normalize them. And you do the normalization. You can do it in two ways at least. You do the normalization in such a way that invariant sets get same probabilities for both pairs, identical distribution on invariant sets. This is the case for the Poisson process and for the Poisson process with an extra point at the origin. They are both trivial and they have same zeros and ones on invariant sets. Anyway, so. So here is a shift coupling theorem, which I find quite nice. Firstly, there exists, if you allow extension, but this is just an existence result, it doesn't tell you how to do it. There exists a random T in G, such that if you shift the origin to T, then you get the other guy. So this is shift coupling of the two guys. You shift the origin of this one to T, and you get that. It's like Yuval was talking about
yesterday.
But he, in his case, it's always explicit and concrete how he finds his T.
In my case, it just exists. So so now here is a coupling shift coupling inequality. It is quite useful inequality. So you need a UB which is distributed according to lambda, and you shift the origin of this guy, the mass stationary guy, to UB according to this uniform guy, and you actually should
in the general setting, you should, if you are not having palm versions here, you should also do the same here, but shifting independently if this guy is stationary.
It doesn't change the distribution, so we don't do that.
This one, shifting here, doesn't change the distribution, so I leave it out. And this total variation difference, it's quite strong, it's total variation, is less than or equal to this expectation of this fraction. There should be, okay, here is something wrong. There should be a
delta, a symmetric difference.
So there should not be intersection, it should be symmetric difference there. Here. I should never prepare slides just before you give the talk. So this should be the symmetric difference. Okay. So now when you have this, if there exists Fellner sets, a Fellner set means a Fellner set, if you put a T here and a T there, put in the Fellner sets here, then Fellner means that if you send if you send this T to infinity up here, the intersection will become in measure the same as the set B.
So the fraction tends to one.
And if you have, as should be here, the symmetric difference, when if you have T here, when you send T to infinity, the symmetric difference divided by this
will go to zero, and it's bounded, so bounded convergence
gives you that this thing will go to zero. And you have total variation limit result, that if you shift the origin of the mass stationary guy to a uniform location in a huge set, then it will be approximately stationary. This is obvious from the shift coupling inequality and Fellner sets.
If you haven't seen Fellner sets, let me explain. Just take R2. Take two points in R2. This might be the origin and this might be T. Think of T now as fixed. And then place, for instance, a ball around the origin and place the same ball around T.
So
now blow up the radius of the balls, but keep these points fixed.
Then the proportion of mass in the symmetric difference will dwindle to zero.
And this need not be balls, these can be any bounded Borel sets of finite measure.
So this is quite general, but it is only holds if you have an amenable group, and it is actually a defining property of amenability. Okay. So here we have this.
And there is another result. You would also expect that if you take the stationary guy and you take a huge ball around the origin and you choose a location in the ball according to the mass distribution. If you have a point process, you would pick one of the points at random. So you should expect that if you do this, you should be close to mass stationarity. And that is true.
So this W chooses according to the distribution of the mass, and if you shift to such a location, you will have in the limit
total variation limit the mass stationary thing. Okay, and I have a few minutes to. I will do it fast now.
So preserving shifts. Now I'm at what Yuval was talking about yesterday.
I will be there for a few minutes.
So you know what this is. So what we do is, if you look at the mass distribution or the points, or if you think of this as points, then we choose a new location. We call it pi. And then we define an allocation rule in the following way that if you are standing at S, you shift by this
location.
Okay, and we say that pi is preserving if tau is preserving. And preserving means this, that the image measure, if you keep omega fixed, the image measure of tau under psi is
psi itself.
And mass stationarity, okay, here we have a theorem, psi is mass stationary and pi is preserving. If this is the case, then shifting the origin to pi doesn't change anything.
So this is like having, in Hugel's case, if for instance, the Poisson process with a point at the origin,
this is not a good doesn't fit here. There are quite complicated ways of shifting to new points in a d-dimensional Poisson process.
I was planning to sketch one example, but I worked on with Pablo,
but
the Poisson tree, but the strip search.
I will skip that. And so you see that this property over here, invariance under preserving pi's,
is a much more natural property that you would maybe want to have as the defining property of points of mass stationarity.
Because it fits with what happens on the line. On the line, if you have a Poisson process on the line, like this, then if you shift to the next on the right, you still have IID exponentials and nothing changes. So, and that is what we are used to. When we talk about typicality in the point process case,
the origin is at a typical location. If you, for instance,
shift to the next point on the right, and nothing changes. Okay, so now comes something, a theorem. So if G is abelian and psi is a simple point process, and this is Gunther and Matthias Heveling,
they proved this.
This pair is mass stationary if and only if for all preserving pi this property here holds.
So for point processes on abelian groups it works as a defining property of mass stationarity.
Note that if psi is a simple point process and pi psi is zero when there is no point at the origin, yes, then pi is preserving if and only if tau is a bijection.
And this is what has been talked about a little bit in the past, finding bijections.
Bijective point shifts. Okay. Okay. So let's go back to this. Here is another theorem. You would want this to be. I initially when I was doing this, I didn't want to do the thing on the first slide. I didn't even consider it. It was Gunther who realized it. It was the correct way of doing this. I wanted to do it this way in general, not only for simple point processes in the abelian case. And there are other examples where this works. For instance, if G is the real line and psi is diffuse, then the same thing holds. And here is an example of pi that preserves. So you can look at it, but I will draw a picture.
to explain it.
So if you have some mass distribution on the line, and here is zero, then fix some r and move forward in the mass until you have mass r. And this is pi r psi. Then, so move forward in the mass by an amount r, or backward by an amount r if r is negative, by around minus r. Okay, so this works, and it's sort of nice because it's similar to the point, next point on the right, and so on, or next point on the left. So you go forward in the mass or backward in the mass. Okay, so here is a result. It is this property that I've been talking about here, this property here, is not equivalent in general.
It's a pity.
So then, personally, I thought it might be equivalent to we could modify the concept and introduce what I've been calling stationary independent backgrounds. And since, yes, okay, maybe I have some minutes.
If I, can I use the whole hour? Yeah, sorry, I'm talking to the wrong guy.
I have what? Oh, I started 4:15.
Very good. Thank you. Ah.
Okay. Yes. Okay, so we are here. So now I think I can finish the whole thing. Good. Stationary independent backgrounds, why? So let Y be some random element in the space on which G acts.
Just like X is.
And call Y a stationary independent background if it is stationary and independent
of the pair.
And
the canonical, the typical, whatever, example, the example I
usually have is the following. If you have the origin somewhere, then you throw the d-dimensional grid uniformly at random around the origin. So that is Y. And that works for point processes in RD, or did work there before Gunther and Matthias showed that you didn't need this background.
To characterize mass stationarity or point stationarity.
Okay, and so we have here the same, setup. We have a pi, and now this pi is not only a function of psi, it is also a function of the stationary independent background.
So the idea of the stationary independent background is the following. Suppose you have a mass stationary thing. You are standing then, if you are standing at the origin, you are standing at a typical location in the mass. Throws at a stationary independent background. If everything looks, if the origin is a typical location in psi, then also if you have the background there also, it is also a typical location in the background, because it's stationary and independent of the thing.
So if you choose in a preserving way to shift somewhere, then you should preserve the distribution you have in the same way as you had when you didn't have the background. It's just you added irrelevant information to help you choose a location to go to. And this is the theorem. In D dimensions, mass stationarity is equivalent to the following for all stationary independent backgrounds, not necessarily this one, any stationary independent background, and all preserving pi, this holds. So adding stationary independent backgrounds In the diffuse case, that's important here, in the diffuse case gives you a characterization of mass stationarity in the sort of in the way that is similar to this. Okay, and you can actually lift this to general psi that are not necessarily diffuse in a in the way that you actually take psi, which is a measure not necessarily diffuse, on RD. You take the product of it and Lebesgue measure in one dimension, and you get a diffuse measure. So the original measure should be mass stationary if and only if the product with Lebesgue measure in one higher dimension is mass stationary. And this is actually true, as is stated here. For all y that are stationary independent backgrounds for this thing, when you have taken the product with Lebesgue measure in one dimension and all preserving pi in that setting, this holds where you have the pi there.
Okay. So you can do this in RD. Maybe it can be done some in general. I don't know.
Okay, now back to shift coupling. This is sort of the key, the foundation that when I started working with Günther, we worked out some foundations for this stuff, and this is from there. And it says that now what we are doing, we are adding another random measure. And
the idea is now not only to shift from in one measure the location to another location, or the origin to another location, and leave everything as it was. We are shifting from one measure to another measure. Like, and that is what I was starting to mention earlier, what Yuval was talking about when you have the Poisson process and Lebesgue measure. So he and Holroyd created a map from Lebesgue measure to the Poisson process, which is balancing in this sense.
But here we do it slightly more abstract or general. We don't have an allocation. Instead, we have a sigma finite kernel from I'm letting this stand for the state space, for the space of this triple. This x, that doesn't matter, the eta and the xi. So k is a kernel that takes this triple to a location in G.
It's a measure on G. If you know the triple, then you have a measure on G. If you had a location, you would actually not have a measure, you would know where to go. But if you only have a k, you only know the probability of going to different places, or the measure of going to different places.
Sigma finite is important. Markovian kernel doesn't work for the theory. That's very curious. Okay. Oh, we say that the case should be invariant, so if you shift everything, you should keep k intact. And k balances, we say that k balances the two measures if psi transported by k gives you eta. And now let this pair, x eta, be
the x. So we have x plus eta. That is now the new x.
So we have it here, and then we have psi. Let this be the palm version of a stationary guy over here. And here is a theorem. The palm version of this guy with respect to eta. So here is the palm version of this guy with respect to psi. But if we swap psi and eta, then x and psi eta, where eta is the where we are, that guide we are taking Palmersian with respect to, this thing here has the same distribution as this thing here. Well, has actually this distribution. So you use the kernel. You look at x eta xi and you choose s according to the kernel. If that gives you the distribution of this Palm version, the Palm version of this thing here, if and only if k balances the two guys. And here is a more understandable thing, corollary, if so
now let's go from kernel to allocation.
Let pi take this to that, and then it induces an allocation,
and an allocation is a trivial, is a particular kind of kernel where there is mass, there is no distribution really, it's mass, there is only mass at fixed points.
Okay, then if you shift according to pi, this guy here, this is the Palm version of, okay, here I forgot to swap eta and xi. So here should be xi and here should be eta. So, okay, if you shift by pi, we have the Palm version of this thing, if and only if tau balances xi and eta.
Almost everywhere pi. Pi hat, actually, it should be.
Okay, so this is general theory, and we are, where was I? I was here, and then I guess I skip some of the introductory lines and add a new theorem. This theorem, so if these guys have positive finite intensities, we assume that, then there exists a Markovian K, which is a more probabilistic thing, balancing psi and eta, if and only if, given the invariant sigma algebra of this guy here, the conditional intensities of these two things are identical.
This is going to imply that they have the same distribution, that the normalized guys have the same distribution on invariant sets. So it fits with the shift coupling theory I had on slide 3 or whatever it was.
Okay, so this is, there is.
So how does it read, for instance, in the Poisson condition?
This condition is,
so if you take, if we go from the Poisson to the Lebesgue, so if you go from Lebesgue to Poisson with the Peres-Holroyd trick, or construction, then that's fine. Wherever you are, you can see what cell am I, and I go to the point of the cell, and that's the Poisson point at the origin. But if you are standing at the Poisson point at the origin, you would like to go out in space, in RD, so that where you now are standing, you see a stationary pattern. And this cannot be done without external randomization. And so it fits in, so psi would be the Palm Poisson, eta would be Lebesgue measure, and k would have give you the distribution to choose a location in the cell that you shift. So you shift somewhere and you are in some cell and you need to know where in the cell you are. So that would be according to Lebesgue measure.
So what the theorem says that, I mean, you can vary Poisson and Lebesgue because there's some variety margin and so just the condition here.
Yes, exactly. The density of okay, the Poisson process has trivial sigma algebra, invariant sigma algebra. So, and the, what you need to have is that the intensity of the Poisson process is the same as the intensity of the Lebesgue. It's one.
Okay, so okay.
And that's this condition,
but it's a completely general condition.
Okay, so let us look at this case that I was talking about here when we have diffuse measures on the line. Not necessarily with a density, but diffuse, no atom. Okay, let's just go straight to the theorem. Okay, no, there are two theorems here, sorry. Okay. Here is a theorem on mass stationary, so stationarity. So we have psi and want to shift in psi itself. And in the second theorem, oops. Sorry. In the second theorem, I'm done with that. I'm here. In the second theorem, you have two guys. In this theorem, you have only one.
So that's the first part of my talk, and then
in the second we introduce eta also. So look at this. Let psi be diffuse and have infinite mass in both directions, and G is R. Then for each R, little r, the pi R defined by this thing here, which is what I was explaining here. You decide, you pick an R, and you move forward in the mass until you have R. Okay. This pi preserves psi, namely this holds, for all R. And
using the theorem we have already seen,
thus if this pair is mass stationary, then this holds. Okay, and here is another. Actually, it is mass stationary if and only if this holds. Okay. Okay, here is the other theorem when we also have eta. So let these two guys be stationary. So I'm dropping the x at the moment. This is really
this is work that I did with Günther and with Peter Mertes, and this is not an easy theorem. So I have full respect for it because I didn't prove it.
Okay, so we have two diffuse stationary guys, and they are singular.
So their support are disjoint. They are concentrated on disjoint parts of R.
Given the invariant sigma algebra, their invariant sigma algebra, they have the same conditional intensity. Then pi defined this way balances psi and eta, namely this holds. So, what is this? Let me explain it
with a picture. So, here is the line. And we are going to apply this to local times. So, let's think of it this way. So, here, local time is for a Brownian motion, so it's a two-sided Brownian motion. So you take another level, x, and then you start from here, you collect local time at zero, and you gradually start collecting local time at x also. And local time at zero is
greater than local time at x in the beginning, but you wait until
you have the same local mass
at x and
mass at 0.
That is pi of the Brownian motion.
In general, this
it doesn't have to do with Brownian motion, but that was an
example.
You are right. Okay. You are right. We should not let this go through.
Yeah.
So.
I'm taking the sigma finite stationary distribution of Brownian motion, and Brownian motion is not.
It is conditional result that we have. We will actually. Wait a minute now. What am I? Gunther, help me now.
In the same parameter, why don't you take just two independent
Brownian motions? No. I forgot the hat.
There should be hats on everything here. So you start in the mass of one. So you cannot do that. I'm a little bit confused now.
In the stationary Brownian setting, you can't.
You are not in the mass of local time at zero.
So what does this theorem say? But if we have
the pound version, not the stationary one, then this makes sense, right? Don't let me think about it now in front of you. Something not right here.
You need to be. Oh yes, yeah, you're right. It really doesn't matter if you are in the mass of psi. Or in the mass of eta.
Yes. Yeah. Right. I'm just thinking about Brownian motion when I'm saying that.
So this intersection here of the Brownian motion can be anywhere on the line, distributed according to Lebesgue measure. Okay. And here, since this is balancing, we had the theorem before. It says now that this pair is the Palm version of that one. If this pair is the Palm version of that one, then this pair is the Palm version of that one. So, okay, this fits.
Brownian motion going to through this at the beginning, standard Brownian motion, is the Palm version of the stationary Brownian motion with respect to local time at zero.
And so that is how we should read this here. This is now the Palm version of the stationary Brownian motion, if you think in these terms. And then if you move, do this and move here, this is the Palm version of the stationary guy with distribution going through
x at time 0.
Okay, and this is the final slide,
and I am this is the standard Brownian motion stuff.
It is quite nice.
And you ask me about it, I'm done, and then you ask me and I tell you.
Thank you. Yes, you can read this. Or do you want me to finish? Okay, let me do that. I am always going over time, so. Anyway, so we are, observe, we have two-sided Brownian motion here. And B is a standard Brownian motion, and P0 is its distribution.
So P0 is what I've been calling P.
And this is local time at x, and nu is a probability measure, and we define local time at nu
this way.
So this y here, this x here, is now replaced
by a distribution.
So if we have a distribution here and not an x, then the same thing
will give you a shift coupling of
Brownian motion where you have distribution mu when you have shifted the origin over here. Then you have distribution mu here.
You are not at x, but you are distributed according to mu. So this is really Skorovhat embedding. But Skorovhat embedding tells you that you have Brownian motion in front of you. This embedding, which is a stopping time, tells you you also have it behind you. Ooh.
Typically, stopping times don't give you Brownian motion behind you.
But this one does.
Okay, so this is... This distribution of this x here. It is a fixed x in this picture, but if you apply the same argument,
the same theorem as we had on the earlier slide,
then you get any distribution, not necessarily
any distribution.
So, yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
It all came during the talk. Okay.
You mentioned it in your abstract Cotswold sensor.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So, thank you. I was going to say it.
Okay.
But now I'm out of time.
Okay. So, part of what's been driving me is how you shift... if you are standing at the origin, how can you shift to some other place and still have the same distribution? That is in the mass when you have only one measure.
And the other question is, how do you go from one measure to another measure so you have the other version of the original process? And, two Palm versions. So the Cox process is a way to do that.
The idea is the following. You have your stationary measure, psi,
and you create the Cox process. Then you have a point process, and you can shift between the points as you shift in point process. There is a rich literature on how to shift between points in point processes.
So create the Cox process and do it there.
And the thing is, the Cox process will be point stationary
with the thing you started with, the psi and the Cox process. Psi is point stationary with respect to psi, with respect to the Cox process.
If and only if psi is mass stationary.
So we can go from mass stationarity to point process situation, point stationarity, and use tricks you have there. And you can do the same thing with another eta, and then you know how to go between points in two-point processes, and the same will apply. So this is actually something that hasn't been... It's lots of possibilities there. And it's... It's not been developed further. But you can turn mass stationarity into point stationarity, which is much more understandable through the Cox process.
Thank you. So there is no other question. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Let's have a 25 minutes.